why not? I've hit record. I think we're live.
Great. Hello, I'm Simon Mercier. This is Crave, a podcast about films and music, television, anything else that's been entertaining me and Steve McKay in the last week or so.
Now, we've seen a couple of very different films this week. I've had the privilege of enjoying Fist Fight.
Sounds like a privilege. I didn't think I'd actually be able to say this, Steve, but I think I've taken the highbrow end here of the week's viewing with Logan, the new and possibly the last Wolverine outing,
right.
Believe it or not.
Right, okay, well, we'll see how much further they milk that one. The big music event of the week has been the Stampede Festival. That was down here in Bukkakoi.
Yes, yes, that's hot off the press, is it not, Mr. McKay?
It is indeed.
Yes,
still dismantling the stage as we speak.
I possibly might just get one last quick, and I emphasise the word quick, mention of Mr. Springsteen, but it will be the last one, I promise.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't, Simon.
Righto, good.
So, in the meantime, tell us about Logan. Is it a superhero film? Is it an X-Men film? Or is it something more, or is it something less than that?
Well, I posted something on the website, a review on the website, where I've just got into this quite a bit, Steve, because actually, I mean, it is about a superhero character or characters, but this is, I think, something a little different for this whole genre of superhero films, which probably the public has had a guts for the last few years. This is an attempt, believe it or not, I think, to make a really serious adult drama thriller out of a superhero movie. You don't see anyone running around in fancy costumes. There are no fancy wisecracks and sort of little looks at the camera, knowing looks at the camera. It's a pretty serious story. It's got a lot of gore, blood, and a lot of profanity. And it's kind of interesting. It features Logan, the Wolverine character, who's been around for like 17 years or something, and Professor Charles Xavier, another long-running character from the X-Men movies. But they are liberally sprinkling the script with F-words, and they hardly have ever done that before in any of the other movies. So it just changes the whole tone of this film watching it. You think, okay, we're in a different ballpark here.
Yeah.
And the character, before I get on to the story, the character Wolverine, Steve, and he's the guy with the claws. Have you
yes.
seen him?
I am familiar.
Right. So he played by Hugh Jackman. So these three razor-sharp claws spring out of his hands and he cuts people to pieces. Now, in all the other movies before this, I don't think they generally dwelt on what actually happens when you jab someone with your claws. I mean, it's slightly masked. But in this film, it's there for all to see. So they don't try and hide it at all.
They're not sanitizing the violence then, are they?
No, it's quite gory and it's almost distractingly so. But I think you look at the whole thing and you think, no, they're trying to say, if you did have this ability, this is what you'd be inflicting on other people. So anyway, so it's quite a serious film. I think it has a different sense than most of all the other superhero films you could think of. I was thinking, Steve, maybe the second Batman film with the Joker was very dark, wasn't it?
Yes.
Heath Ledger doing his thing. But even then, you still had a guy dressed as a bat.
Yes.
And you still had Heath Ledger with paint all over his face. This does not go there. So the story basically is that it's set in 2029. Logan is looking older. Professor Xavier, played by Patrick Stewart, Sir Patrick Stewart, is also looking rather decrepit and ill. They're looking after each other. There don't appear to be too many other mutants around. It looks as if, for some unexplained reason, there are no more mutant children coming into the world.
Hmm.
And people who follow the comic books will know, but will be able to guess more about this. But the film doesn't really go into this very much. But into the lives of Professor X and Logan, a young girl called Laura appears, and they are asked to help her and take her to safety. She's being pursued by a desperate, deadly, violent bunch of bounty hunters called the Reavers at the behest of a genetic scientist who seems to have designs in using Laura and her genetic makeup for God knows what. And so they do take her under the wing. They do try and protect her from the Reavers. The scientist is called Xander Rice, by the way, and he's played by the British actor Richard E. Grant.
Oh, wow.
Who actually plays it in a rather understated way, adding to the more serious tone of the whole film. So once we understand what's going on, most of the film is kind of a pursuit film. Logan, Charles Xavier, and this young girl, she's only about 9 or 10, on the run. The pursuit from the Reavers is brutal. It's relentless. There's blood flying everywhere. This is an R-16 film, by the way, Steve, as Deadpool was. And yes. we talked about that a while ago. So although Laura is a very young girl, and eventually other young children appear on the horizon, I wouldn't be taking a I don't think I'd be taking a 9-year-old to this. No, probably not. They'll probably find a way of seeing it. But so it's a bloody full-on grim story. It confronts mortality in a way that most of these films don't, because I think with a lot of superhero films, you think even if someone gets killed off, they're going to find a way to come back. And not so much in this film. And I think the other thing about it was that a lot of these films, Steve, going back to when the X-Men were first introduced, like 50, 60 years ago now, the whole idea was, I think, about prejudice. The big theme was, this is a group of people, mutants. They're different from the rest of us. They're being ostracized. They're being discriminated against. And that was a very strong theme, played through all the movies as well.
Yeah.
In this film, that's not so much played up. It's just this idea of they battle for so long. Maybe they are mortal after all. And this is how this might play out. So I recommend it. It's not the light escapist fare of an Avengers or an Ant-Man or even a Doctor Strange that we saw and enjoyed a few months ago. This is quite gritty. It's violent. It's serious. But it's pretty. It's got a lot to get your teeth into.
So it doesn't cleave that closely to the standard genre of these things, does it then?
I don't think it does. I think it's a deliberate attempt to really be more serious. There is a little bit of humor here and there, and I saw it at a screening organized by an Auckland comic book graphic novel business called Heroes for Sale. So all the people who were watching it were big fans of this type of film.
Yep.
And I got the sense, talking to them afterwards, that they thought, ooh, this is something a little bit different, and this is really, a little departure. So I think I saw an interview briefly where Hugh Jackman said, I'd like to think someone who doesn't like superhero movies could go and watch this and think they got something out of it. And that's probably mostly true, I'd say. You wouldn't have to be a huge fan of these films to still, there's some pretty good acting. Patrick Stewart's a good actor. Jackman does a good job. The little girl who is played by a young woman called Daphne Keene is very, very good as this little girl. She almost steals the show. So I've rattled on enough. I recommend it. Be ready for some gore. and if that's your sort of thing, I think you'll quite enjoy it. I think it's had some generally good feedback so far.
Yes, I have seen good notices. And I did notice, incidentally, the acting talent is quite remarkably cosmopolitan. Let's have a quick look. We've got Hugh Jackman's an Australian.
Yep.
We've got Patrick Stewart, Stephen Merchant, and Daphne Keene are all English.
Although I think Daphne Keene is she? I thought she was had Hispanic heritage as well.
Well, apparently, I've been looking her up. Apparently, her father's from Oxfordshire.
Okay.
I don't know about her mother yet, but certainly she's of English heritage. I know that much.
Okay. Okay.
Richard E. Grant is South African.
Oh, is he? I didn't realise that.
No, me neither.
My apologies. Okay. Right.
But there's certainly there's a broad mix. I mean, this historically has been a very American genre.
It has.
So it's just interesting to see the amount of Commonwealth talent we've got in there.
Yeah. So I don't know whether you would like it. You might like some aspects of it. It might still not quite be your cup of tea, but you might do. It might be something I might even just encourage you to maybe just spend a few dollars on a ticket there, Mr. McCabe.
I might just think about that then, Simon. might just give it some consider. It can't, put it this way, be any worse than the film I saw this week.
Oh, God. Fist Fight, was it?
You know, look, I saw it, and you're the one that sounds disappointed, and that shows how bad it is.
Oh.
Have you seen the trailers for it?
Actually, I don't think I've even seen the trailers, no.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a telling thing in itself, I don't know.
I hadn't seen any advanced publicity for it. I hadn't seen any trailers, I hadn't seen previews, anything at all. So I knew it was coming out. I had to miss the screening. So I thought, in the interest of the cause of Crave, I would get myself down to the local cinema and see it.
Yeah.
And so I did. And
yes.
Yes, yes. Well, here's, I mean, the premise is absolutely bizarre.
Right.
Charlie Day, who I'm told is very, very good in shows like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, plays Andy Campbell, a mild-mannered English teacher in a high school in Georgia, whose colleague, Mr. Strickland, played by Ice Cube, is a psychopathic social studies teacher who resolves student discipline issues by taking a fire axe to student desks.
As you now, do.
Well, I mean, for me, that level of it is basically wish fulfillment fantasy for me, to be fair.
But, says the high school teacher.
Yeah, I'm not technically allowed to do that too often.
No.
And so they're all looking to save their jobs because there's probably, you know, the another axe, another metaphorical axe is swinging over their jobs. And so that the principal, played by Dean Norris, tells the two teachers that one of you is going to get fired. So Campbell snitches on Strickland, who then says, right, you and me fist fight after school in the car park.
Right.
And that's it.
Oh.
That's the film. And it's nonsense. It is completely and absolutely preposterous. There interspersed among it are jokes about the one teacher, Holly, played by Gillian Bell, who is a hopelessly oversexed paedophile teacher who has fantasies about sleeping with her students. And apparently, because it's a woman who's having these fantasies, that makes it funny. If it were a male teacher fantasizing about sleeping with his 18-year-old female students, it would just be creepy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Somehow, because it's a woman doing it, that makes it funny, apparently. And it's done so broadly, so sledgehammer humor that it's not funny. There are moments when you raise a smile. There are, like, for example, there's one brief moment when there's a horse goes stampeding through the corridors of the school, and apparently the horse is on meth, and you can get a giggle out of that. But the rest of it is just nonsense.
Yes, the lack of enthusiasm is ringing in your voice, Steve. Selling it to me.
No, I'm not. I mean, it's odd. It I guess in the right hands, maybe somebody could have done something with this. There are the briefest moments when you raise a smile, but it's because there are. It's very disjointed. It's trying to be about four or five different films at once. There's even a thread of the, you know, the politics of education running through it, and the teacher, Mr. Campbell, delivers a lovely speech to the school board with the school superintendent, played by Dennis Haysbert, who's previously played things like The President in 24.
Oh, okay.
And clearly he's fallen on bad times if he's doing this nonsense. He's better. We expected a lot better of him. And frankly, Dennis, if you're listening, we're not angry. We're just very, very disappointed in you.
Yeah.
You know better than this. So there's this wonderful lecture that he gives about slashing funding to education. And you're thinking, well, why can't we see that film, please? That film would have been good. There's occasions when it wants to be sort of a Porky's Animal House kind of frat boy comedy, but again, hasn't got the nerve to sustain that. And at the end of it, you're thinking, oh, good, is it over?
Oh, well, that's... I need not know any more. It failed at the writing desk then, probably,
well,
before it ever...
I think it's what they refer to as a high concept film, where basically someone doesn't go into detail when they pitch you. They just say, here's the idea, here's the premise. Teachers have a fist fight.
That's it.
That's how this whole film was going. Okay, yeah, fair enough. It's like snakes on a plane. There's your concept right there. There's your high concept. The snakes, they're on a plane. Go make the film about it. And that's as far as they went. And nobody ever thought to actually have acting. I mean, Charlie Day winds his way through this film. Everything he says is constantly said like this in a very high-pitched, whiny voice. Seriously, please, mate, please, I want to punch you in the face. Ice Cube is psychopathic for no reason that anyone can fathom.
Yeah.
Gillian Bell as Holly, the nymphomaniac teacher, is trying to be edgy, trying to be daring, and just comes, like I say, it comes across just as being profoundly creepy.
Okay. Well, I think I'll leave my boxing gloves at home and give that one a miss then.
Yeah, you picked up on my subtle negativity on
your subtle hints.
I tried to rein it in, but you know, it spilled through, didn't it?
It did a bit. You couldn't help yourself. Oh, okay, that's okay. Hey, it's nice to know what to see, and it's nice to know what not to see.
Yes. Don't buy a ticket; it'll only encourage them.
Exactly. Oh, all right. So let's fist fight. Jolly good. Hey, what about music? Now, we had a big music week last week. Steve was this, what's his name? The guy again? He came over, went to Mount Smart Stadium.
Ben Spruce Sting or something?
Something like that. It's on the tip of my tongue. I'm still sort of coming down off that high. But you, Steve, have boldly carried on and looked at new types of music, or different from Springsteen anyway, and you've had a country music fixed. And this is, and what's more, it's been in your own home patch.
Well, yeah, I'm not usually. I mean, even given my American connections, I'm not really a big country music fan. I find it to be highly formulaic and very twangy. It doesn't really usually work for me. But I had to go because, I mean, seriously, walking distance from my front door last night was the Stampede Music Festival down here in Pukekohe. I'm told it's going to be the first of an annual thing now, and that would be a good thing for Pukie down at the racetrack there. Yeah. But it was interesting to watch. There was a nice little undercard of bands like, for example, the Waratahs, who were without doubt the highlights of the day. To be honest, the only actual band of the day. Everything else was singers with backing bands, but the Waratahs were an actual band.
And of course, they've got a great heritage and street cred in this country. They've been around for a long, long time. So that's a great band to bring in for your first ever Stampede festival, I would have thought.
Oh, very definitely. But they were low on the bill. They were on around the same time as Jody Doreen, who was brought in when Tammy Nielsen had to drop out.
Oh, that's a shame. Yes. Oh, okay.
She had commitments actually in America.
So she
couldn't make it.
That means things are looking up for her, so we should be happy for her for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pukekohe's loss, etc. So then we came to the two main highlights of the night, the two headline acts. There was Leanne Rimes.
Yes.
And she does quite well, well.
Yes. And I have to say, Steve, I've got the Crave website open before me, and you've done a fantastic job capturing Leanne Rimes in her concert, bare feet and all. And so if you haven't seen her before and you want to find out more about it, just thecravepodcast.com, check out Steve's photos. They're great. Yeah, so tell me about her performance. It looks like she's very natural and at ease on stage just by looking at the photos.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she's clearly a very, very comfortable performer. She's been singing apparently on stage since she was about 13 or something. This is what she does. She's a very effortless, very relaxed performer. I mean, she was so comfortable on stage that at one point she made a big thing about kicking off her high-heeled shoes and she performed barefoot for the rest of the show, which got the predictable huge cheer from the audience. The problem is, she's a very, very consummate performer. She's got a lovely voice. She's got an easy stage presence. The problem is, I think it's the music itself. As I said, maybe I'm the wrong man to review a country music show. It's very, very polite music. It's almost utterly inoffensive, which unfortunately translates...
Sorry, can I just ask you, I'm going to interrupt you. Do you mean lyrically or musically or the way... Is it like not a... What do you mean in that respect?
I suppose, the logical extension would be eventually you're on the path toward elevator music. It's very nice.
Okay. That's a cutting comment.
Well, yeah, like I say, she doesn't reach those depths, but it's very polished, very nice. Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes you just want a little bit of an edge to your music. You want it to actually have a bit of oomph, and unfortunately, like I say, it's all just a little bit too innocuous. And as a result, it wasn't terribly memorable. Except, and I hate to be negative. I hate to really lay into it. One of the few things I do remember was she closed out her set with a little medley of cover versions. When she did a little snippet of R.E.S.P.E.C.T., it felt like she was reaching for and not quite getting to Janis Joplin territory. Didn't quite get it, and she hasn't got the funk for 1999. But then, let's be fair, since last year, nobody does.
No.
But she was nice, and she went down very well. She was very popular. And even if I didn't get it. I'll tell you what, the people at the front of the stage certainly did.
Okay.
She was
right,
very popular. But then...
Then
I'm going to have to be very, very careful what I say here, because the McCrearians, as they call themselves, have been all over our Facebook page looking at photos of Scotty McCreary this morning.
Okay. Now, I've got to be honest, I don't know much about him at all.
Neither
did I. Terrible thing to admit. Yeah.
American Idol contestant.
Okay. Okay.
One of those. He came to fame in American Idol, and he is your archetypal modern country singer. He's got a little bit of a boyish charm about him. He's a young fella, good looking, bit of a twinkle in the eye, and he sings basically what's known these days as alt country.
Okay.
It's pleasing rock with a little bit of a country twang, and half the time it was all the worst things about country music. It was saccharine-y, and it was dreary, and it was unbearable.
Okay.
And then half the time, he remembered what he was good at, and he started singing genuinely up-tempo, powerful. Are you familiar with bands like Molly Hatchet?
No.
Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Yes.
Heading in that direction. Didn't quite.
Wow.
Didn't reach Skynyrd territory, but then nobody ever can.
Yeah.
But at one point, he had his three guitarists across the front of the stage, and I was thinking, this is a Molly Hatchet song he's playing. It was classic country rock.
Yeah. And again, Steve, I'm just going to do another plug for your fine photographic work, because I'm just looking through the photos right now as we're talking. And, yeah, you can see even with the still photographs, there's some of the shots, there's a lot of energy going into it. And there's all the guitarists lined up there in the front of stage, as you say. And you can see him playing to the audience. So I get the sense of what you're talking about, that when he threw himself into it, he was obviously engaging the crowd.
Oh, very definitely. You can tell the man's a very an accomplished showman. He's got a good voice. Given the right songs, he's great to listen to. A lot of the set wasn't my thing and left me cold. But when he remembered what he was good at, like I say, when he decided he wanted to be a Southern rocker, it worked. And it worked very, very well.
Yeah.
And maybe I was the wrong man to review the show. I'll tell you what, the audience were loving every second of it.
Yeah, and as you say, it's gone down a treat on our Facebook page.
Has indeed.
Lovely.
I'm not sure I personally would rush out to see him again, but I think it's probably more to do with the fact that it's not my style than the fact that there's any shortcomings in his performance.
Laid eyes on those Levi's while I was begging on my knees. Pretty please, so won't you be my booty chain, baby? The pain on time.
Well, hey, we're a pretty broad church here at Crave, so we can cover all sorts of things, can't we?
We can, but what do we cover most extensively, Simon?
I set myself up for that, didn't I? Well, look, I don't want to say too much more about Mr. Springsteen. We've discussed it at length, even in our special podcast last week. But, Steve, there was one thing that I just want to follow up on one thing you mentioned.
What's that?
In our live chat straight after the concert, and it struck you because that was your first viewing of a full concert of Springsteen, and you made the point to me that I didn't quite see him engaging directly with the audience as I might have expected. And actually, I thought about that a little bit more, and it was an obvious point arose which I didn't come into my mind to discuss with you straight away, but I talked about it in a post with Tom from Seattle, who kindly got in touch with us afterwards on our website. The fact is, he usually these days takes many requests from the audience.
Yes.
But that night he took none.
No, I don't think he did he?
No, the only thing that happened was right at the end, the Dancing in the Dark song, he always gets people requesting, you know, people to go and dance with, and that happened. But apart from that, all the songs were songs he wanted to play. So that is, I guess, either he looked at some of the requests and he didn't feel like playing them, or for the very last show of the tour, he thought, I'm just going to do a set I'd like to do, and here's hoping you enjoy it. I suspect it was the latter. I think it was that was quite a difference, actually, from the feel of the show. It may have been why you thought, I think he seems to be just doing his own thing. Might be. Just a thought. Hey, by the way, the last time he was here in 2014, Steve, he opened each of his Auckland shows with a cover. A cover version.
I remember hearing about this.
Yes, an acoustic version of a certain song called Royals by a certain New Zealand up-and-coming young woman called singer called Lord.
Yes.
Of whom we've heard more this very week.
Well, we've heard more this very week because we've heard very, very little, nay, these several years.
I know. It's true. It's been much talked about. When's her second album coming along?
Mm. Well, yeah. Well, her first album, do you realise it was 2013? It was 3.5 years.
Wow.
Since Pure Heroine came out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least we know the name of the second album, and we've had the first single, so that's something.
So you've seen the first single, you've seen the video, I assume, for Greenlight. What do we think of it?
Yeah, two things struck me about it. It's interesting to see a little bit older. I thought the song was a good, strong, catchy song. I didn't think it was perhaps as immediately memorable as maybe Royals was, but I think the lyrics were good. It was it's a heart aching breakup song. The thing that really struck me, Steve, is I think she's quite a good actress.
Oh, I wasn't even paying attention to that aspect.
No, I to be honest with you, I don't spend a huge amount of time watching modern music videos, but I'm familiar with the kind of the pouty look to the camera and the knowing look. And I thought if you look at her performance, there seems to be an element of genuineness that she's trying to get into how she's acting out what she's singing.
Yeah.
And I find that quite an appealing part of her persona, and I suspect it's something she's perhaps thought about. But yeah, if you get a chance, have a look at it. Maybe I'm just, you know, being a little bit too kind because she's a fellow New Zealander, or all New Zealanders want her to do well. But I think she's got some quite strong ability in that part of her performance, it's like the song, the video has her dancing and carrying on as if she doesn't give a hoot about what's going on around her, dancing in public just by herself. A lot of self-confidence.
Yeah,
just a little bit more mature. I found that struck me watching it. The song is good, but the album's called Melodrama. I don't know if we had a specific date for its release, but be interesting to see what the rest of the album's like. It's had a lot of good comments from not only sort of general fans, but I see some celebrities have been endorsing this first single, Greenlight, including someone from one of your favourite TV shows.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, you're a Breaking Bad fan, aren't you?
Do you know, I never got into it.
I thought you were. Oh, what was the other?
No, that's about chemistry teachers. I'm a physics teacher.
Ah, yeah. Anyway, the guy who plays the young chap... the Aaron Paul is the actor's name. He tweeted how much he enjoyed her song, new song. It's By the By.
Well, it's an okay song, but I have to say, I spent about the first 45 seconds waiting for it to actually start.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like it has a go at being this song, it has a go at being that song. It's like five different songs that she tries out before she settles onto which song she wants. And the song she wants, I think, is an interesting new direction because it's basically... If you remember, I mean, the classic of hers, obviously, was Royals.
Yes.
Was a very, very pared-back, very stark production. This sounded like she wants to be doing arena rock.
Possibly. Yes. Yep. That little habit of sort of slow start build-up and then eventually you get there. I'm just, off the top of my head, I can't remember the name. She did a song for a film... and it was I'm going to have to Google it while we talk. But there was another song that she did. Yellow Flicker Beat. That's right. Yellow Flicker Beat, and that was to one of the Hunger Games. And that was I thought that had a slightly similar structure of a slow burning type build up, and then you get into the chorus quite a way into it.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just a little bit of her shtick. I don't know, but yeah, I don't think it was a great song. It didn't hit me between the eyeballs. Certainly,
no.
Not bad, but not.
No, I still get the feeling that she's kind of being pitched kind of as the Kiwi Kate Bush, and she's kind of trying to figure out exactly who she is herself yet. Part of the problem is, and again, the same thing happened with Kate Bush to a degree. I mean, she was an infant when she made her name.
And, I didn't realise that, actually. Okay.
Well, she wasn't as young as Kate Bush was when she first got going, but...
I thought you meant Kate Bush was very, very young.
Kate Bush, I think, wrote her first number one song when she was 13, if I remember correctly.
Whoa, okay.
Exactly. And Lord was 17 when...
Yeah.
When Pure Heroine came out. And it's an awfully early age to suddenly have that level of fame and glory thrust upon you.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. Yeah. So I think, as you say, it's a time of your life when you are very much figuring out who the heck you are and what sort of adult you're going to be. So, you know, I think people were, I suspect there's still a lot of goodwill toward, yeah, not only in this part of the world, but just people thinking she's got some talent. It may take a while till we get the full bloom of it, and we'll be patient. So, well, let's just see what happens with the rest of the album. It'll do well, I suspect.
I have a feeling it might.
Yes.
Speaking of things doing well.
Yes.
Last time we spoke, other than things Springsteen, we shared a few ideas about what we thought was going to happen with the Oscars, didn't we?
We did. That's only a week ago. It seems like an eternity. That's right. And the thing that most people are going to remember about the Oscars was the debacle at the end when they read out the wrong best film. But
it has to be said, though, you know, I did think that the producers of La La Land handled that very well.
They did, didn't they?
I mean, they didn't make a song and dance about it.
No, they were incredible. Yeah, they really held it together and showed a lot of grace under fire. I agree with you. Well, I think we both saw La La Land, we both saw Moonlight, and we both had, I liked both of them. I liked La La Land. I wasn't sure if it was necessarily the best film, but I liked it a lot because it was so refreshing and different. And I liked Moonlight, but I did have some reservations about it. I don't think you were a big fan of either, from memory, but correct me if I'm wrong.
I was okay with La La Land. I thought that it was overrated, but fun and pleasant and frothy and light and inconsistent and uneven, and Moonlight failed to impress me.
Well, isn't that interesting? Here we are. It's got the best film. Oh, by the way, we talk about the Oscars, Steve, and how the Academy votes. I just wanted to get myself up to speed again. There's about 6,000 people in the Academy.
Yeah,
and they're elected to the Academy by a board of governors, and most of the time you don't know who's on the Academy. But it's a reasonable body of people, but they're all industry insiders, actors and producers and editors and directors. And so when people say that the Academy looks at a film like La La Land, which is about Hollywood and set in Hollywood and kind of likes what it sees because it's about itself, that all makes sense, doesn't it? I think Moonlight, I think, won probably because it was tackling a subject that hadn't had a lot of, especially in American cinema, hadn't been tackled before. It gave it a decent, serious treatment. The difficulties I had were with a couple of the characters who I didn't really believe, although one of them won an Oscar, so what do I know?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, Steve, you know, like here in New Zealand in the, mid to early 90s, we had a film, Once Were Warriors.
Yes.
Which was set in the Maori urban community and tackled abuse within abuse of a wife, abuse of children. It was a very heavy, full-on film. That's more than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And maybe the fact that, I don't know, does the fact that it's made such a splash over there give some credence to the fact that American society is still in many ways quite conservative compared to others? I don't know. That thought crossed my mind.
Well, if you remember, when Moonlight first came out, it played to a very, very small audience. There was a press screening here in New Zealand back in November, and it was very much an art house film that nobody thought would go anywhere. And then suddenly, I don't think it actually got a full release in New Zealand at that point, and then suddenly there was a huge Oscars buzz around it, massive awards buzz. Suddenly we were getting invites to press screenings, we were being told it was going to have an extended release. This was not a film that anybody ever imagined would go anywhere because... I mean, if you remember, I don't think there's a single white person has a speaking part in the entire film. In fact, for about 95% of the entire running time, you won't see a single white face on the screen.
Yeah.
That's very, very, very unusual in American cinema. You just don't see films. You rarely see films with black leads. You never see films that are entirely black. And so that was always going to make it difficult for this film to go anywhere. But then suddenly, as soon as there's Oscar buzz around it, then everybody wants to see it. Everyone's going, it's a very important film. It's a very important film. Well, if it was so important, why weren't you interested until then?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? That Oscar buzz, I wonder whether we need to take a step back and think about the whole the politics of the USA, Steve. I mean, A, because the year before there'd been all the hoopla about the previous Oscars being too white and not showing enough diversity.
Yeah, that, was the Oscars so white year, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah. And then within the last 6 to 9 months, we've had the whole Trump discrimination issue front and center in American public life. And one wonders whether that was sort of bubbling away in the minds of these Academy voters, also feeling, hey, well, here's, we'll stick one to you, Mr. Trump. This is the, you know, this, we're not scared of promoting this side of our culture and who we are. And so you just wonder if all those aspects play into it as well as just purely artistic and cultural ones.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. It's a fair reading of it. Yeah. But you have to wonder then, Best Picture was Moonlight, but Damien Chazelle won Best Director for La La Land.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a worthwhile win. I would have rather seen those two the other way around. I would rather have seen Barry Jenkins win Best Director, because he did actually do something rather interesting. I don't personally think the film worked, but he actually tried to do something interesting with it.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have, I mean, if we're suggesting, as you're kind of hinting toward, if we're suggesting simply that Moonlight won on racial politics, I would rather have seen Hidden Figures win. That was a phenomenal film.
Yeah, that's right. That didn't really, and in fact, it was another black-dominated film for acting, which was Fences, which we didn't get to see. But I mean, so that, yeah, there was quite a change in that regard. Actually, can I just mention very quickly just one thing about the directing of Barry Jenkins, Steve?
Go ahead.
There was a scene quite early on in the film where the Juan, the actor played by Ali, who won the
Mahesh Ali character,
Juan, and you see the camera spinning around him 360 degrees as he's on the street talking to a
That's the opening scene of the film, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, the sub lieutenant who's selling drugs.
Yes.
And it's like a 360 degree walking around thing. I saw that, and because that's the sort of thing that in my TV reporting and in news and current affairs that reporters would sometimes want to employ, and I used it that a bit myself a couple of times to sort of show what was going on. But I thought about that later, and that I thought, you've done that for effect, and it kind of is interesting, but it doesn't go anywhere in terms of promoting what the story's about, or it was just I can do this, so I'm going to do it.
And yes.
I got a bit cynical about it, actually. I felt, what is it? You know, the film didn't need it.
No.
It looked, anyway. This
but it looked great, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it looked great.
And unfortunately, that was the entire film for me. It was substance was lacking for me, although what substance there was overly portentous. I just didn't care for it. I also don't know what on earth Emma Stone was doing winning Best Actress for La La Land.
I liked her performance, but I'm not sure if I saw enough of the other Best Actress performances to make a good comparison. Was there someone else who you thought really deserved it?
I've only seen snips of it so far. I haven't seen the whole film, but the one that's looking really interesting to me is Natalie Portman as Jackie Kennedy.
Ah, right. Yeah.
That's one I do want to see very much. Also, you mentioned Mahershala Ali for Juan in Moonlight. Again, I would have loved to have seen Dev Patel in Lion. Why he wasn't nominated for Best Actor, I don't know.
Yes, that's good point. Yeah,
but you know, what do we know?
Yeah, and I have to say, one of the most, you know, Sid Logan was serious, but by far the most serious film that made you take a big breath was Manchester by the Sea, which got the Best Actor and Best Original Screenplay.
Yes, it did.
Actually, Steve, of all the films from this year, that's the film that'll stay with me the longest.
Oh, wow.
I can't say I enjoy isn't the right word.
No.
But it really hit me, and I think that's it just treated a very difficult subject with a lot of integrity and made a big impact on me. So anyway, so we didn't do that well with our picks, but never mind.
No,
that's okay.
Better look next year.
Hey, so look, there's still quite a bit coming up in the next little while, Steve.
There is.
Some music and film, actually.
Well, I got an invite to the screening of Kong Skull Island.
Yes, me too. I'll see you there.
Yeah, really? Are we going to go? I think we ought to.
I think we ought to.
Have you seen the cast?
Yeah, the cast looks pretty interesting, pretty good.
Tom Hiddleston, Samuel Jackson, Brie Larson, John C. Reilly, John Goodman, Corey Hawkins, Tian Jing. I mean, everybody and their dog is in this film.
I mean, yes.
If sheer weight of acting talent is anything to go by, it's going to be the best film of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see it at next year's Oscars, but yes, indeed.
But that's coming up. It's a two-hour monstrosity of a film. Something tells me the final half hour is going to be the special effects credits.
I reckon you're right, yeah.
But we've got that coming up very, very shortly. We'll withhold judgment on that.
Yeah.
Obviously. Now, yes. Music is of interest to mention. One that you'll be interested in, Simon, 21 Pilots are playing very shortly.
Yeah, who I enjoyed so much last year. I really did. Are they back at the Vector, Steve?
Yes, they are. They're coming back to Vector Arena later this month, about 2 weeks' time. We've got Adele is colonising Mount Smart Stadium in about 2 weeks' time. They're going to have to rename it after her.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. We've also got next, in about 2 weeks' time, we've got Justin Bieber.
Now, you've got a special delegation of reviewers for that one, haven't you, Steve?
I'm of the opinion that one shouldn't try and review something if one knows that one will not like it. That's not really honest.
Yeah.
So I'm going to line up family members who are going to be my guest reviewers for that one. They're going to I'm going to dodge that bullet and they're going to take it for me.
Excellent.
We've also got a couple of old names.
Right.
Have announced Midnight Oil coming over the pond, over the ditch from Australia in September. That's going to be brilliant.
Okay. Yep.
Now, here's a name from the past, Adam Ant.
Oh, yeah. We briefly mentioned him the last time. I'm surprised he's still going.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Does he still wear a lot of makeup?
Yes, he does. I think he needs it these days.
Yeah.
Another band from my youth, Ocean Colour Scene.
Oh, I don't know them.
Oh, they're worth a look. They're sort of they were known in Britain as like Grandad Rock. They're very much they were big in the 90s, a classic album called Moseley Shoals, which very much harks back to sort of classic 60s mod rock. They're very, very good. They'll be here in November. And then away from music and film, let's do a bit of comedy. Coming very shortly to Auckland and to Wellington and to Christchurch in April, we've got Cosmic Shambles Live. Now, this is going to be very, very interesting. Robin Ince, who is a British stand-up comedian with a very strong scientific bent.
Oh.
He co-hosts a British radio show called The Infinite Monkey Cage with Professor Brian Cox.
Yep.
And he's doing a comedy show alongside... Are you familiar with Michelle Dickinson?
Oh, just tell me a bit more about her.
She also goes by the stage name of Nano Girl.
She's, rings a little bell, but I don't know much about her.
She's a scientist at Auckland Uni. Her big thing is nanotechnology, but she's also she's a very big science evangelist. And she does science entertainment on stage. She's basically trying to bring science to the masses and make science cool. And I can't speak highly enough of her for that.
Okay, cool.
And so they're putting on a show together alongside also British comedian Josie Long. They're going to be in Auckland on the 4th of April at the Outer Centre, the ASB Theatre. Then they're going down to Wellington and Christchurch. So that's going to be good.
Yeah, excellent. There was a lot happening. Actually, can I just quickly mention something that's on? We're recording this on a Sunday.
Yes.
Tonight, we don't often talk about TV, but tonight there's the first of the third series of the British crime drama Broadchurch, which caused quite a stir, I think, the first two series here, and I think it did in the UK as well.
Oh, yes, it's huge.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of people looking out to see how that goes. And I remember when I was still with RNZ Afternoon, Steve, having quite a debate that ran over several weeks with about the merits of Broadchurch versus another gritty British crime drama called Happy Valley.
Right.
Which I thought Happy Valley was absolutely first class. And I enjoyed Broadchurch at first, but then it paled slightly for me in comparison with Happy Valley. But, yeah, it would be great to see what the third round of this they've kept the two central characters seem to like they're there again. They've brought back some of the other supporting cast. So where they take it will be interesting.
That's got Doctor Who in it, right?
Yeah. The Scots chappie.
David Tennant,
that's the one.
That's the one.
Yep.
For my sins, I've still not seen it. I'm going to have to do some binge-watching before we speak next.
Ah, yes.
I know, I'm appalling, aren't I?
No, not at all. So look, we've got a lot to follow and chat about over the next few weeks, haven't we?
Haven't we just? We're going to be busy.
Oh gosh. So there are various ways you can get in touch with us, and we've been very pleased to hear from you in the last few weeks, in particular. I don't have all the. Well, I haven't got the details right in front of me. I know we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. Steve, can you help me with all the details?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the first place to start would be our website, cravepodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at cravepodcast.
Excellent. And people have been. It's lovely.
I know. We're a thing. We're happening.
Great.
We're trending.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful word. Okay, so until next time, I'm Simon Mercier.
And I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Excellent.
Very good.